Yes, it is great to be back once again. I'm glad you're here. I always look forward to getting together for this edition of the Parish of the Patriots, which happens to be the 174th. It's insane. 174th episode. Can you believe? I mean, 174 of these discussions, and it hasn't gotten monotonous yet. At least not for me. You may be listening to me going, it's pretty monotonous. I got to be... Got to be honest with you, Dan. It isn't isn't all that, but hey, you're still back here, so it can't be too bad. Again, thank you for joining us. You always got to get the spiel out early on. There's no PayPal. There's no paywall. We don't have PayPal either. That's been permanently banned. There's nothing behind a paywall. There's no hidden content. There's no subscribe here to get the extra good stuff. Unfortunately, this is as good as it gets. I'm sorry. We just pass the plate around and ask that you don't be shy. Pay your tithes. Put something in the plate. Believe me, it makes a difference. You may think, you know, hey, I can't really send that much. Believe me, if you send something, it's more than the vast majority of people do. If you just put a couple dollars in the plate, it helps. Trust me, if you want to be a part of that, that information's at the bottom of the description page here on Radio Albion for this show. You look down through the text of the show that nobody reads, but yet I sit around and write that out every week. Yes, I personally write that out every week. I think Sven goes back through it and tries to make it somewhat more coherent. You know, applaud him for that. But at the you can skim that. You don't have to read it. Get to the bottom of the page. You're going to find everything down there. We got snail mail. Nothing gets easier than the snail mail. We got Bitcoin. We have the Monero. We got the Monero. We got an address for Monero down there. And by the way, if you sent Monero before, please use this new address, the address that's posted on the description page now, not one of the old addresses. This is my new permanent Monero address. So please use that. And of course, I got email down there. Drop your notes too. You know, it's all good. It's all fun and games. And part of the fun and games is the listener supporter mailbag. GPD time is counting down to something. I'm not sure what. But man, I'm drunk when I watch it. That's from Mr. T. We're counting down to like quantum singularity, the black hole of clown. We're just all going to be just sucked in. I think the timer, you know, like an hourglass, you know what an hourglass, you look at the hourglass and as the sand runs out, it symbolizes the time running out. And you know, when the sand runs out, the time is up. See, I think the quantum singularity of clown is as they add colors, as they add all these different colors and shapes and more demonic symbols to the gay anal rainbow flag. At some point, when they add enough different symbols, shapes, and colors to it, it will trigger the quantum singularity. Then we'll officially be fisted as a society. Dear Griff! Hey. Dear Grandpa, thought I should send this link with plenty of testimonials about cancer and loads of other stuff. Do a little research, and if you're interested, be well. God bless. That's from Nick. Much appreciated. I'll check it out. Always appreciate it. Always good to hear from all of you. It is one of my favorite things. A little bit of more interaction. Yes, the flag. It is. There's no escape. It is Gay Anal Month. And we're just being inundated. It's wrapping up. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. I don't know that we'll really actually be able to tell. Imagine we have to have a whole month. You know? A whole month. We get lectured to every year at Christmas. Like, you can't be not inclusive. You know, you Christmas, that's just a religious holiday. You Christians and your one day of Christmas. What about people that don't celebrate Christmas, that aren't Christians? You're excluding them. You're leaving them out of your one day out of the year. And yet, the societies in the West, we get a whole month of gay anal fisting to be celebrated as pride. You know, we got to see all of this. Non-stop rainbow flags that now have triangles and different weirdo colors. We have no clue what they all mean. Don't care. Nobody says, hey, what about people that aren't into gay anal fisting? What about them? You're excluding them. Well, wait, we want to be excluded. Never mind. I just followed that through. See, because I just fly by the seat of my pants on this show. It's not like I have a script or something. And I just realized, do you really want to be included in the fisting? Because I don't. All these colors. Yeah, all these shapes. Now it has this weird triangle thing, which I think there's something about that that's demonic. I don't know why. My gut instinct on a spiritual level, when they have to start shoving triangles into everything, you know, like you see a music video and they start doing the one eye thing and they start putting all of these triangle symbols. Please don't send me a bunch of emails explaining Illuminati blah, blah, blah to me. But I do. I think there's something just on an instinctual level. Seems to be something about that shape. Seems demonic. They've added it in, of course. I don't know what all these colors mean. They added like this black stripe. I assume that meant that was the official stripe for the pedophiles, but I think I read somewhere, and I may be wrong, because I don't really try to keep up with all of this gay anal stuff. But I think that was supposed to include people of color. No one asked. No one asked the... No one went to the black community and said, hey, we want to put, you know, something symbolizing you on our gay anal flag. Go to the church of, you know... The Church of the Nazareth, what's happening now in the black community, and ask Reverend Johnson down there, you know, he'd be like, get out of here, get away from me, Satan. They didn't ask, just put them on there, whether you like it or not. People of color, you get to be on the gay anal flag. So sick of it. So sick of it. They just have to just. Really, no pun intended, but there's no way around the pun. They just keep cramming it in our faces. So tired of it. Pride. All these words keep getting redefined, you know? They redefined love to mean some sort of sex. Love is now just, it's just, it means you must be doing some kind of sex. And now pride. Now pride is, if you start talking about pride, it means you're doing some kind of gay stuff. Good comeback for you. When they start talking about pride, say, yeah, God says all in the Bible about pride is a sin. Maybe this is what he was talking about. Oh, you can't just say that. It's you know, they push this stuff. They cram this stuff. these puns, they cram this down everyone's throat. They do this. And they say they're doing this to make everybody more tolerant. You know, this is to make you more tolerant, to make things more inclusive. Do you look around? What's the end result? Do you think people are more tolerant now? Do you think as a society, you know, people are more tolerant? 30, 40 years ago, people were more tolerant of this gay stuff than they are now. Most people just didn't give a shit. You know, it'd be like, hey, you know. So even if you lived in a small town, people would be like, you know, so-and-so over there, you know, he's gay, you know, and people would be like, yeah, he does seem a little light in loafers or whatever, you know. Well, I mean, people didn't care. They make up these boogeyman stories. They really do. You know, they try to act like if we don't do this, then you're going to have, you know, gangs of thugs, always white, always portrayed on TV as white guys, of course. They're going to go around and beat these queers up and in before you're using hateful slang. No, that's what the Q stands for in the LGBTQ, whatever the hell rest of that alphabet is, queer. So you can't say you're being hateful. And nobody was going around doing that. Like, people might have like been whispering around and snickering or whatever, but people were generally by and large. Oh, we found this one example. Whoop-de-doo, you can find an example of anything. The point is, it's a lot. There's less tolerance now. There's more. All this stuff they keep doing, whether it's the race stuff, whether it's the gay anal stuff, whatever, all of it. They do this claiming, and it's a lie, I believe. They do this claiming that they're trying to increase tolerance in society. Well, judging by the outcome, they're doing a really bad job. I'm old enough. Look, I'm old enough. Society is a hell of a lot less tolerant right now than it was before. We got more racial strife going on now than there was before. You got people, you spending a whole month shoving gay anal propaganda in everybody's faces. They're a lot less tolerant of that now than they were before. Oh, and now they, of course, want to indoctrinate your kids in it, but it's also will be all more tolerant and more understanding. Yet the end result is less tolerance, less understanding, and they just keep doubling down. That's why I don't believe them when they say that's the reason they're doing these things. They push the multiculturalism and they say, we need more tolerance. And at the same time, if you look close enough, you'll see that the same people are constantly stoking up racial strife. They are. They're constantly. When they go around and basically tell black people that white people are looking to, like, get them, you know? White people are looking to personally harm them. White people are going around looking to wreck their lives or kill them. White people are the enemy. That is the message that's constantly being told. It stirs up racial strife. And yet those of us that speak the truth of these things were the ones inciting some sort of hatred as a government. And you say, oh, how do you say the government is? Because you look at the government and the media and what they're doing. And now we look at the results. We have more strife and less tolerance than we've ever had before as this society collapses. Everything in the West is inverted. It's satanic. It's inverted. And projection. It wears me out. They project on these other countries. And it works. It works. People will still, you know, be like, well, you know, at least we have free speech. You know, when they go out and they say, oh, you know, Russia, China, they point the finger and wag the finger at them and say, look, they persecute people for political reasons. Really? Really? I'm not saying, you know, people have this, like, you've got to be all in or all out. You know, they go to these extremes. I'm not saying Russia and China is like some utopia for political dissidents. Of course, most of the political dissidents they have in those places are being funded by the West. So, yeah, they're an actual real threat. I don't think those countries really care about, I don't know, Joe Ivan down here, who just so happens to not, you know, to disagree with some government policies. You know, I don't think they care about a single Chinaman out there that, you know, thinks Chairman Xi isn't doing a great job. Most of what they're dealing with in political dissidents are funded by the outside, by the West, to try to cause a color revolution, to try to disrupt the order, to try to bring down the government. That's a whole different thing. But at the end of the day, it's so it's so beyond hypocritical when they say that. And people buy into it. Talking about earlier, you know, when I talk about, you know, how you can support this show. You can't have a PayPal link. I get people be like, I really like to, you know, I'd like to pay a tithe by using my card. Can't we do something that simple? No, we cannot. I have people being like, I'm so worried about, you know, I got to be anonymous. I understand that. But the reason that people are so worried about that is because people are politically persecuted in the West for their views. They are. They're persecuted. We do. It just really galls me when they run around and point the finger at everybody else. And it's like, what about here? What about here? What about our free speech? It's okay. You can have all the free speech you want. Why we basically lock you away, whether that's figuratively or literally. Then you can talk all you want to. That way nobody can hear you. It's like when they say that, you know, you have a right to protest in this little fenced in area isolated from everybody else. It kind of defeats the purpose of the protest, doesn't it? And at the end of the day, it damages, what do I want to say? It damages the political discourse. The censorship is harmful to everybody involved. And I've said this before. It needs to be said again, I think. It doesn't, because, you know, people say, well, you know, the quote-unquote left, you know, these people that sit there and parrot these, it's advantageous to them because they're not getting banned, but it's not. The worst thing, that's why I say the government and the media working together, because we don't have a free media. You can't claim to have free media when it doesn't matter which media outlet you go to. They're all just parroting the exact same lines that the government parrots. You can't claim that. That's just ridiculous. We don't have a government-controlled media. Really? Point to me. Which of these news stations, these network news, these 24-hour news outlets, which one of them are disagreeing with the government? Which one? Not disagreeing with a particular political party. Which one is disagreeing with anything the government puts out? Virtually none of them. And yet they claim to have a free media. This is how the government and the media working together is increasing the societal breakdown. They're increasing. There's less tolerance. There is less, what do I want to say? There's less friction. There's more tolerance. There's less people getting along. Because when you censor one side, you create these bubbles. And it tends to create a bubble on the extreme. If you had like a normal, like people, for instance, could go on social media without worrying about being banned for their political views, you're going to have people on the extreme ends of the scale. You know, you're going to have people on the extreme. And again, the left-right terms are really in so many ways have become so obsolete. But for lack of better terms, you got people on the far left on the extreme, and you're going to have people on the right on the extreme. But everybody, most of them are going to wind up somewhere on a scale in the middle of that. It's sort of like the way they tell us gender works. It's on a sliding scale. But unlike that, it really does work that way in political discourse. And when you hear the other side, it challenges your view and at least makes you consider if you have any ability to grasp new information. But when you create these bubbles, when you isolate, say, the left on Twitter and the right on Gab, they're just talking to each other. And it creates this illusion that, like, really everybody thinks what I think. There's some few lunatics over there, but nobody listens to them anyway. So in other words, you create the two extremes on the spectrum, and they get inflamed. And there's no room for that meshing in the middle because they don't meet, because they've created a censorship line between the two sides. The side that advocates for censorship, by and large, time and time again, is the side that cannot defend their positions because their positions are not based on fact. They're not based on reality. They create these bubbles. They create these bubbles on the extreme, and there's no room in the middle. This is why the censorship that they do, why the crackdown on political dissidents, is so harmful to everyone. It really is. It's harmful to the left. They don't think it is. They think it makes them feel powerful. It does. They get off on it, a lot of them, because it makes them feel powerful. Oh, this person hurt my feels. This person disagreed with me, and I couldn't back up my position, and I complained and got them banned. Look, I'm powerful now. But you couldn't defend your position because your position is incorrect. You know, I mean, you can't deal with life with incorrect information. You can't solve problems with incorrect information. You got to have the correct information. And I don't think people on the extremes should be banned, because that's how it all gets started. It pushes the window. You know, that leaves room for everybody in the middle to converse. You get all over in Europe. And such, they have, of course, all of these draconian hate speech laws, which we technically don't have here in the U.S., but we kind of do. We kind of de facto do in a lot of ways. It's like this absurdity of hate crimes. It's, the feds are stepping in and they're declaring this a hate crime. Well, if somebody killed somebody, that's pretty hateful. And I'm pretty sure the maximum punishment for that, I don't know how you're going to increase that by making it a hate crime. But over in Europe, of course, you have the insanity of these hate speech laws, and it gets into all of this convoluted nonsense about, you know, trying to, by pure conjecture, decide if somebody is feeling an emotion or not. How do you determine that? If they say they are, they aren't. They're just telling you that. You can't know what's going on in somebody's head. And so what if they are? I mean, really, so when they make, this could make somebody feel an emotional of hate. Well, if they don't go out and hurt anybody over it, I don't really care. There's plenty of people that hate me, but you know, as long as they're not causing me any harm, I don't really care. I don't expect everybody to love me. They should, but I don't expect that. They do. They purposely try to make it convoluted. You know, they purposely try to make it like it's a difficult thing. You notice on all these problems the government causes, when people finally notice there's a problem, they try to act like, well, it's complicated. We don't really know how to handle this issue. Well, it's not. It's not complicated. Look, common sense. Just common sense. You know, if somebody's on social media saying, by the way, which I believe both of the most recent mass shooters did, and somehow that didn't pop up on the radar. If somebody goes on social media and says, man, I plan to go out and kill people, then yeah, that's a problem. Somebody should check into that. You know, somebody should check into that. That's a problem. If somebody goes on social media and says, all of you people need to get your guns, go down here and kill this person. Yeah, that's illegal. It is illegal here in the U.S. where we don't have hate speech laws technically. And it should be illegal. You can't go out there and say, go kill these people. That's ridiculous. But just because somebody doesn't agree with your political views and maybe, you know, is trolling you or something and you get all upset over it, should they face persecution for that? Should there be censorship of it? This isn't that hard. This isn't that hard. You can't get off into the la-la land of, we're thinking they're causing other people to feel an emotion of hatred. Are people not responsible for their own actions? Talking about these convoluted narratives. You know, the contrast of the way they make the narratives what they want them to be. And this is setting aside all of the, let's just say, glowy details of all of these incidents, just setting that aside and taking the incidents at face value. You've got the Buffalo shooter and you've got the Uvalde school shooter. You know, people were, you know, you have this act of violence where people are killed. But since the Buffalo guy was a white guy, you know, it's all about that front and center. Race is front and center. So I say the media and the government, they agitate this strife, these problems, this intolerance. When they make it a highlight, he was a white guy going out to kill black people. This is telling black people, white people are out to get you. White people are just going to show up and shoot you at the supermarket. Never mind, you've got a greater chance of being shot in your own neighborhood walking down the street by another black person. Statistics don't lie. They're telling you this. But the media hyped this up. This throws gas on the racial strife. And yet it's those who point out the truth who are accused of incitement of something. Now, with the Uvalde shooter, he wasn't white. And so they highlight, they just ignore the race. And I'm not saying his race had anything to do with it. But they ignore race right off the bat and go straight for the gun control angle. You know, they highlight race if it's a white perpetrator. If it's a non-white perpetrator, then they take a whole different angle. Why? It's not hard to see the way that they constantly throw gas. They throw gas on the fire. And then they sit around and people that disagree with the government, they say, you're the ones that are making it like this. They're standing there with the gas can, blazing flame in front of it, and you're over here with a hose, just a little garden hose, with no effect, still trying to pour some water on some of the fire by speaking the truth, and they're like, you're the cause of it! Look, he's spraying gas on the fire right now! And they're the ones standing there. The government and the media are the ones standing there with the gas can and the match! You're the reason nobody's getting along! Shut up. Quit disagreeing with us. Go along with the program. No matter how bad the program is. They try to break people off. They really do. They claim they want a multicultural society. Tell us what that means. Does that mean everybody's supposed to get along? Because it seems to me like the way they purposely fragment everybody into groups. And I'm coming from a perspective that, historically speaking, multicultural societies never last. But even with that said, they hyper-fractionalize everybody into groups and try to constantly keep these groups turned against one another. They try to keep the people fighting one another on racial. They stoke the intolerance. For instance, I mean, they do it in a way to where they do it in isolation, to where you're not supposed to conflate the two. For instance, this whole promoting of this gay anal stuff and all its various forms in the schools on kids. I mean, they go on and on about the don't say gay bill in Florida. That is so laughable. Oh, like, oh, Governor DeSantis, he's just going out there and trying to oppress homosexuals. All that law says is that before the fourth grade, you can't start pushing, you know, this change your gender and you're really a girl or a boy or whatever on these kids. Fourth grade, you can go full gay anal on them. But before that, you can, and that's just over the top. But you see, they keep it isolated. They're not going to the black church and asking, do you think you're going to see somebody from CNN, MSNBC, who's going on about the don't say gay bill, and we're going to go out here and see what these Christian fundamentalists, we're going to see how crazy they are. We're going to go into Mount Ebenezer, you know, of the Rock Church in the black community and ask Reverend Jackson, hey, what do you think of this? Because Reverend Jackson going to go off on your ass about promoting all this genderism and homosexuality to the kids in school. You ain't going to get an answer you like, but see, they're going to do that because they got to keep the blacks over here mad at the whites, and they got to keep the homosexual stuff over here and shoving this on your kids, and they got to keep all of that. They got to manage all of that, and it's only possible because of the censorship. They're trying to create a monopoly to where the government-coordinated media is the only information you get so they can keep everybody isolated. They don't want white Christians sitting down with the black preachers and being, what do you think about this pushing all this crap on our kids in the school? And because the black preacher is going to be like, yeah, no, they, you know, I'm waiting for God to rain hellfire down on them. They want to keep you isolated. They want to keep everybody stirred up against one another, and that increases their power level. It gets right down to it, doesn't it? That increases their power level. If everybody's busy scrapping amongst themselves, look, and I'm not saying like if they weren't doing that, the races would get along and would be utopia and kumbaya. Let me tell you what, utopia doesn't exist on this earth. It never will. And yet these people claim they're going to create one, and it's a lie. But you can sure as hell make people, you know, have a situation where people are going to be more likely to get along. I've always said that, you know, I've been a working person my whole life. And I've worked with every race of person there is. And among working people, they all pretty much want the same thing. To be left alone and somehow make their life a little bit better than what it was last year. It's not that complicated. They have to create this narrative and keep everybody whipped up because that increases their power level. If everybody's busy fighting amongst themselves and all these different and focused on the latest agenda. Oh, God. We've got this constant. You know, what are we outraged about this week? Are we supposed to be focused on the Ukraine? Are we supposed to be focused on more gay pride? Are we supposed to be focused on this or that? Or oh, look, this one bad thing happened to this person that's really terrible, and we all got to focus on it as a country because, you know, nothing bad's happened to anyone else in the country. We hear about these things. And, you know, it might be a tragedy for that one person. But, you know, tragic things are happening to people every day. I'm not trying to be cold. I'm not trying to say those things don't matter to the people that they're happening to. They do matter to them. But the messaging is we're only supposed to care about the stuff that the media tells us we're supposed to care about. You know, you get some spectacular mass shooting and 20 people were killed. You're not supposed to notice it. Well, you know, more people than that are killed every day in various accidents and things such as that. I mean, for the people that lose family members, you know, that way, it's a tragedy for them. We're only supposed to care about the things that the media tells us to care about. Like I say, it just amazes me that they claim, on the one hand, they want, you know, to have this multicultural, multi-ethnic, tolerant society. And then the same people, on the other hand, turn around and do everything they can to balkanize all these different groups as much as they can. And again, that's what the censorship does. They balkanize everybody so that, you know, they actually have they have as little contact with other groups as possible. You know, it's also tiresome. It really is. You know, I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's like these people, like these rank and file people that just live on virtue signaling, you know, about what the latest thing is, you know. I mean, they'll sit here, you know, like, for instance, if I take a wrong turn, if I'm driving down the highway and I take the wrong exit, and I look up and I'm on Martin Luther King Boulevard in the black neighborhood, look, I'm going to get out of there as quickly as I can because I know it's going to be full of crime. I know this based on fact, not emotion. I know this based on a statistical fact that you got a higher chance of being involved in some sort of crime, and especially being a white person in the black neighborhood. And that's just reality. I'm going to get out of there. I'm going to find my way on the side street and get back on the highway and get out of there. It ain't my neighborhood. But what gets me is these people, these virtue signalers, if they take the wrong exit and they're on Martin Luther King, you know what? They're going to do the same thing. All the while denying that reality. Well, I'm not quickly getting back out of this neighborhood as quickly as I can to get back on the freeway because I think there's a greater chance of being a victim of crime here. You know, I don't think that. I'm doing it because I'm really in a hurry to get Starbucks and to where I can sit down and post about how not racist I am on the internet or whatever the hell. It's just so tiresome. Now you sit around virtue signaling, and like I've said before, I said this on, I believe, last week's show, they don't believe any of that crap. Not really. They tell themselves they believe it. Because of the censorship, they're able to live in that denial. They're able to deny that reality of how they really feel about the reality of what they really, the way they really live their lives. And all of this censorship and all of this balkanization and all of this making sure people don't talk to one another and have no way to talk to one another, and that the government and system make sure that everybody, you know, can be always in some sort of conflict so they can gain more power. All of this actually is what leads to less and less so-called tolerance. Judging strictly by the evidence, it's not hard to figure out. They're not promoting. It's like I said, everything. I'm going to start preaching early. Everything satanic is always backwards of reality. It's the opposite of the truth. And because of this, no matter how much they squawk about free speech, no matter how much they squawk about multiculturalism, no matter how much they squawk about tolerance, when you look at the evidence, they're promoting exactly the opposite. We need to go ahead and get into the Christian specific segment this week. I know you're looking forward to it. If not, you should be looking forward to it. I don't know. Hopefully you will. So anyway, you know what to do. If this is like your first time listening, stick around. Don't turn it off. Don't be like, well, I don't want to hear a bunch of Jesus stuff. I think you'll get something out of it. It's always a goal, you know, but it is the segment of the show where we are, you know, it is specifically for people who are already Christian believers. But like I say, I've had non-believers say they still like it. So you might think about checking it out. Regardless, as I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So for this week, I don't really have any particular Bible verses I thought we'd discuss. Instead, I thought we'd just kind of have a general discussion. In other words, going to shotgun it this week. We're just going to talk about some random things that I think will be of interest as Christian believers, as fellow Christian believers, to help us in our walk with faith, or walk in our faith, rather. You know, and some things to keep in mind, things I think about during the week, things I've jotted down during the week that I thought, we might kind of hit on and discuss. Because, you know, it is an ongoing process. And one of the things I thought we'd kick off with talking about is not getting sucked into the trap of misjudging your own life. And what I mean by that is it's very difficult because we do live in a society that gives us the message. And you think, even when you're conscious, before we get into it, even when you're conscious of these messages that society tells us that we know are wrong, when you're brought up in them, when you're raised in them and around them, and you're inundated with them 24/7. Remember, I don't believe it's the natural state for us to have this mass media set. This is not the natural state of man. We're supposed to be connected to nature. Instead, we're connected to the internet. Instead, we're connected to this never-ending flood of media and marketing and information, and it confuses your mind. So it's very difficult, even when you become aware of these untruthful messages, to still get sucked into them. again, were raised up in them. And then you become an adult and you realize they're wrong, but you can find yourself being pulled into them over and over again. A message that we're given in this life, in this society, the constant message is the value of your life is how much wealth you have, how much power you have, how much money do you have. And we're aware of this as Christian believers, but I can guarantee you still get sucked into it. I still get sucked into it. I'm not going to lie. I still get sucked into that. Sometimes I wake up and I look around at my life living hand to mouth and doing whatever I can to try to, you know, make it from one week to the next and pay my bills. And I think, you know, at my age, you know, what the hell have I been doing with my life? I guarantee you, if I have, you have. Again, you know better, but it's easy to get pulled into it because it's the constant messaging we're surrounded with. What kind of car do you drive? What kind of house do you have? Much money do you make? This is a lie, of course. Everything from Satan is a lie. It's this inversion thing. Let me ask you something. The way I think something to keep in mind with this is, who can be the judge of the quality of your life? I would say only the one who gave you that life. Only God can judge the quality, how you've lived. I think it's not without purpose that when you read of different people in the Bible that, you know, did these things, it's, you know, whether it's the prophets or say John the Baptist or whatever, you know, they were always poor people. I mean, look at like John the Baptist. He's living in the desert wearing camel hair clothes and eating bugs. He was eating the bugs. No, it's always like these poor, it's like hardly ever. Do you have, you know, with the exception of like kings and such, but they had a different role to play. But generally speaking, when you go through the Bible, even Jesus Christ himself, he didn't go around like rolling in the dough with his posse. They're going around being poor, basically, living off of donations. You know, they go around to do all these miracles and then, you know, hey, do you want to like chip in, help us so we can make it to the next town? We have this constant messaging from society, the quality of your life, the meaning of your life, the value of your life is how much money. Now, we talked just last week, I believe, about, you know, how this is a lie, because we talked about how those who are wealthy and powerful, you know, they act like, you know, this is their meaning. But the thing is, if that's what you put your hope and faith in, you are guaranteed to lose that hope and faith. This life will end. I don't care. Sure, if you could be a multi-cajillionaire and be able to afford the most cutting edge, I don't know, infant organ harvesting and blood transfusions, but you're just putting off the inevitable. This life will end, and that which you put your hope and faith in, if it's your wealth and your riches, that which you built up, which somebody else will ultimately enjoy, it will be taken away from you. No, the one who can judge the quality of your life, the meaning of your life, and so forth, is the one that gave it to you. He will be the judge of that. Also, imagine if somebody like gave you a gift, gave you an investment, and said, here, do something with this. And you're doing the best you can with it, but then some third party shows up that has nothing to do with the whole thing. They're just a busybody. And then they show up and they're like, what are you doing? Oh, you're doing that all wrong. Oh, you don't know what you're doing. Let me meddle. Let me tell you what you're doing wrong. Let me get you over here. And it ultimately comes down to give it to me. And squander it. Here, let me swindle you out of the gift you were given. Because if you don't really find the purpose in your life and the meaning in your life and the satisfaction in your life, you've been swindled out of the gift. The society's trying to swindle. The devil's trying to swindle you out of the gift that God has given you. Oh, this is a third outside party. They can give you it. They can give you this life. How are they telling you the quality of your life? Oh, no, you need to instead spend it on stuff that will, you know, blow away and be gone someday, instead of investing it in the eternal where it can never be lost. You're investing. Of course, it's not necessarily going to show up as success in this life because you're investing in the eternal that's outside of the realm of time. Oh, you haven't done anything. Well, yes, actually you are. You're trying to invest in the eternal. It's not necessarily going to show up here. One of my favorite parables of many is the parable of the three servants that were given, you know, a certain amount of money of different amounts, you know, to invest in. And the third and wicked servant just basically took it, hid it away, and it was all over. He dug it back up and said, when he was called to account, he dug it up and he says, here it is back. I didn't do anything with it. That's very telling of how we live our lives. How do you invest in this life? How are you making something out of the gift that was given? How are you investing what was trusted to you? Just hit it away and now it's over. Here, you got it back. Now we're even. Say, I didn't take nothing from you, but I ain't giving you nothing extra back. The one who gives it to us is the one who ultimately judges how we've lived our lives, the quality of the life we've lived. We get hung up on this idea. We got to do some sort of great thing. We got to do some sort of great and grand, fantastic thing. And the truth of the matter is, most all of us never do. Very few people actually do. But does that mean our lives have no meaning? If God has given you the gift of life, it is up to you to make the most of it and then to invest in the eternal realm, in the life to come. It doesn't mean you have to do some grand and, you know, something that's going to be written down in history. If that's a requirement, then all of us are ultimately in pretty bad shape. We invest in this life. We try to figure out. We try to grow closer. We try to grow spiritually. The whole point of this exercise and this brief amount of time that we're birthed into is to mature, is to grow up, is to become spiritually mature. The funny thing is, those who get sucked into this idea that the meaning of their life, the quality of their life, and the measure of success for their life is a financial gain, is some sort of financial status, they miss the entire point. If you're not spiritually mature, then you have squandered it. God doesn't need money. Really, I mean, he doesn't. I've wound up with this many millions of dollars in the bank. So what? You leave without it? You're going to get to judgment and be like, you know, you look at the Lord when you enter the eternal realm and be like, well, you can go raid my, here's the password to my bank account, God. It sounds silly, doesn't it? And yet that's how so many people tend to live their lives, tend to measure the quality, tend to self-judge the quality of their life. Instead, we should be growing, we should be maturing, and that means trying to understand God through these things he has created. I am one that believes that in so many things, God gives us an avenue to understand things, at least a little bit, from his perspective. I really do. I think so many of the things we experience and go through in life, you know, that it is to understand more about him. For instance, you know, people get locked into this mindset. As Christian believers, I see Christian believers my whole life, and they do. They have this mindset that God, because right now, it's like you will have two extreme mindsets among the average Christian believer. One, which is the current popular mindset that is promoted as mainstream Christianity today, is this, like, God just, you know, loves everybody. God is love, and there's no kind of any... There's no sort of any effort required on your part. As long as you say the magic words, you're saved, and there you can forget all about the Lord and go about your day to day life. You know, hippie peacenik Jesus. I don't know. You have that extreme. The other extreme in Christian belief is this notion people have, like, the other extreme. In other words, they have this idea like God is sitting around, like, just waiting for an excuse to damn you and send your ignorant ass to hell. You know, it's just sitting around waiting for you to screw up. And when you do, buddy, let me tell you what, he is going to be there. You aren't going to get away with anything. He is going to be there to drop the hammer on you like you can't believe. You better be watching your P's and Q's, because he's looking to get you. God is out to get you. Of course, both of these views are incorrect. They're extreme views, and they miss the entire point. Yet God provides ways for us to understand him, to understand his viewpoint, to understand where he's coming from, at least a little bit. At least a little bit. I think one of the ways that the Lord gives people a way to learn about him, to understand him, is through having children of your own. If you have children of your own, ask yourself, is that the way you relate with your children? As much as you may love and cherish your own children, trust me, God loves you more than you love your own kids. You need to say, I love my kids. I really love my kids. But you say that, but trust me, God loves you more than you love your kids. So ask yourself this then. Do you sit around looking for an excuse to beat that kid's ass? I'm just looking. I'm looking at you. You're going to do something, you know? I mean, sadly, there are parents that are like that, but I'd like to believe that, you know, on the norm, parents aren't like that. I always say that one of the facets, one of the things that makes you officially an adult, because there's people that go through their whole lives, and even when they're old people, like, a lot of their views and the way they see the world is very childish. One of the things I've always said, I believe, is like your official, a sign that you are officially an adult, is when you move from the childish view that your parents are like these infallible people, you know, because when you're little, you know, when you're a small child, you view your parents as these infallible beings. And even though they're screwing things up left and right, you try to make sense of it because they can't be doing any wrong. You know, you trust them inherently. But when you become an adult, you realize that, you know, they had no idea what they were doing raising you. You know, they had no idea what they were doing raising you up. They were just people doing the best they could. Understanding your parents as being just people is one of the tenets of being an adult. You'll see these people, and I mean, they're grown, not teenage, grown. They're in their 30s. And they're like still mad because mommy or daddy, you know, did a shitty job raising them. They still expect them to have been these infallible people instead of realizing they're just screwed up people that had no idea. You get kids of your own. You realize when you start raising them, you realize you got no idea. You got no idea what you're doing. You're just trying to do the best you can. God gives us all kinds of ways to learn and to understand. If you're raising your own children, do you sit around just looking for an excuse to get them in trouble? Not to say that you don't have to discipline them from time to time, but you do that so that they won't make bigger mistakes. Isn't that correct? You're not doing that because, you know, I'm looking forward to punishing this kid. No, you're hoping to set them on the right path. You realize they're making a small mistake and you have enough foresight down the road, because kids don't. You know, you raise kids, you understand they don't have any understanding of what their brains don't comprehend, the idea that this can lead to this, can lead to this, which can ultimately build up and turn into a disaster. That's your job as a parent. You've got that foresight to see. God has the ultimate foresight because he's in eternity. He sees how it all plays out ahead of time. Now, so what do? You wind up saying, no, you can't do that. Well, a kid thinks you're just being mean to them. They're just being mean because you're not letting them do that. They don't see any harm in it because they don't have the ability to look down the road and see, oh, well, this leads to a bigger problem. And you're not doing it to be mean to them. You're doing it out of love. And likewise, you know, sometimes as a parent, especially as they grow older, you got to sit back and realize they're making a decision. It's not going to be like a life-ruining decision, but do you realize they're making a decision as they're starting to become adults that you're thinking, that's a mistake? But you look and it's like, well, I mean, it's not the kind of mistake that's going to ruin their life. And so you sit back and you might tell them, I don't think that's the way to go, but you do you. And you sit back and let them make that decision, even though you kind of think, man, that's probably not going to work out. The point is, you got to let them learn themselves. You can't just micromanage their lives. And likewise, God doesn't micromanage our own lives. You know those people that, like, they walk through the house and stub their toe on the end table and they're like, Jesus, why, Jesus, did I have to stub my toe? Why was it in your will that I stubbed my toe? His will didn't have anything to do with you. You just stubbed your toe. I'm using, of course, an extreme example, but you know what I'm talking about. You know? People that think like every single thing, everything that happens every second of the day in their life is somehow like God. They don't understand God's will as being like this portrait you're looking at. And at the end of the day, it looks like this. You know, they think God's will is like him like micromanaging their life. I stubbed my toe. That means Jesus sat there and like scooted the table over so I had hit it. It sounds funny, but I mean, people do. They have that extreme idea. Sometimes God's going to let you make mistakes. That's why you have this life. I would say you have free will. He's going to let you make mistakes. Likewise, though, I don't think he's totally indifferent to us. I mean, what parent is totally indifferent to what happens to their children? You know, you're born, you're just what? He just abandons you. Good luck. I'm out. Your infant laying there. How long is an infant going to lay if somebody doesn't, you know, bring them along? So I don't think God's totally indifferent to our lives either. In a healthy parent-child relationship, the children should always feel as though you, as the parent, are on their side. Doesn't mean you can do everything for them, but they should at least know and feel as though you are on their side. You know, you're not perfect. You're not, you don't necessarily even have all the answers, but you are on their side. If the rest of the world craps all over them and turns against them, you should always be on their side. You know, I've had people ask me from time to time, you know, well, you know, what if my child becomes this or comes home and announces this? You know, should I just disown them? And my answer is always, well, no, they're your children. You know, even if they do something that you completely 100% disagree with, you know, I'm not saying you should sit there and act like you accept it when you don't. But should you just cut them out of your lives? Well, they're your kids. Again, this shouldn't be confused with, like, I don't know, if you have a child that's addicted to drugs and they keep coming over wanting to get money from you and you know they're just getting the money to buy drugs. I'm not saying you should do that. But I mean, at the end of the day, they're your kids and they're, you know, they're a part of you. You know, that doesn't end. You just, you're no longer, I have nothing to do with you. No, I don't think so. Because again, this is just getting, I guess, back on point here. Having your own children is a way that God teaches you about Him. You know, this gives you the ability to look to, so that when you get confused and you're like, what is going on with my life? What is God even doing here? Well, just stop and ask yourself, you know, okay, wait a minute. You know, from a parental perspective, you know, God doesn't hate me. I don't hate my own kids. So why do I think like God has turned against me now and is just raining nothing but trouble down on my life? Again, I think many things in this world, in fact, so many things in this world are set up, you know, within the natural order so that we do learn about. This is spiritual maturity. You're like, what difference does it make? Because this is spiritual maturity. And you enter the eternal realm. You know, I mean, it's very clearly spelled out. You know, I mean, you're not entering the eternal realm with your physical body, duh. When you enter the spiritual realm, there's a whole different set of rules at play. The eternal realm is basically being on the same plane of existence as God Himself. The more you understand about God Himself, the more you're going to be prepared to deal with that realm of existence. I hope that makes some little bit of sense. God gives us these ways to understand Him, to understand things from His perspective, because ultimately that will give us the maturity when we enter the spiritual realm to have a clue, you know, to have a clue of what's going on. It says in the Bible, God created all of this. He told, you know, He says, man has dominion over the earth. Go out, subjugate it, you know, do what you're, let's see what you're going to do. As human beings, let's see what you can do with this world, with this planet. Of course, those who are non-believers say, oh, like the world is the end all. This is all there is. Yeah. They promote all of this climate change hoax and all the rest of it based on, you know, this world. This is the end all of everything. We've got to do these things. But God says, take the world, subjugate it. Let's see what you can do with it. God has dominion over, I mean, the world is irrelevant. This is a temporary existence. God has dominion over all things. So God gives us dominion over this small thing. Again, you're supposed to be learning. We are supposed to be learning about the Lord. Doesn't mean we just tear it up. because that's not how God functions. What do we need to do? Well, we need to take care of it. We need to build it up. We need to do something with it. We need to develop it. We don't just need to ignore it and let it go to ruin. Is that how God wants us to live as a people? Just ignore it and go to ruin. Let everything go back to grown over with vines and trees. And there we go. It's just, we don't develop farmland. We don't do anything. There it is. We just let it go to ruin. Is that what God does? No. Again, we're given these things. The whole purpose of this exists. The whole purpose of this exercise is we're supposed to at least understand things somewhat from his perspective. We're supposed to get a clue. And we see this around us in the world as people, as the way people are functioning. They're getting further and further away from that, aren't they? It's a society. As a society, they're so far removed from that. It always just seemed crazy and silly to me, you know, because people go around, they have this idea that, you know, these non-believers, you know, I mean, they view things as like, this is the end all of everything. Like, we just showed up here for no reason. We just have consciousness and self-awareness just by pure happenstance. And they accuse us of believing in fairy tales. Really? What fairy tale do you believe in? That we just showed up somehow? We just magically came into existence. We have self-awareness just by pure happenstance. Like, the mathematical odds of that are beyond zero. But this is what people believe in. This is the end all. And as a result of that, they don't learn anything. It becomes a complete failure. They don't learn anything about the Lord. They don't try to learn anything or gain any wisdom or understanding about the Lord. I was thinking too the other day, trying to change the subject. Like I say, this is kind of random, all over the place, just a general Christian theme discussion this week. I didn't really have, like I say, most of the time we have something and it's like we go over like some reading in the Bible and try to bear it down. This week is just general things I think about. And I was thinking earlier this week, and I jotted this down, and like I say, since this has turned into just kind of a random discussion, I always, you know, there are just like certain things that people struggle with as Christian believers. There's just certain things, and one of those things is this love your enemies thing, and people just really, 9 times out of 10, when you get critics, you know, that's one of the things they'll throw up. Loving your enemies. Who's your enemies, though? I was thinking about, bear with me, I was thinking about this, you know, because at the end of the day, because people might point, you know, like some grand, you know, this group of people are my enemies, but really, who is an enemy for you personally? I think for most people, it would be safe to define a quote-unquote enemy as basically anyone they don't like. No, really. You know, I mean, for you personally, not who you see as an enemy of humanity or things. And remember, I'm one of the ones, you know, the Bible says clearly that there are some people that, you know, a lot of people in this world are like children of Satan. I don't fall into this Pollyanna Christian view that, you know, we're all children of God when the Bible says exactly the opposite. They're weeds sown in with the wheat. They're children of the devil. You ain't never going to reach those people. You're wasting your time. You should not be around them if you can avoid it as much as you can. But for most people, when you say your enemies, what they really mean is people they personally don't like. And I was thinking of the arrogance involved here, you know? In other words, just because I don't like this guy must mean that God doesn't like him either, right? That's how people think. I don't like that guy. I think he's an asshole. So as a result, that must mean God thinks the same way. Well, no. No. I mean, look, again, you can learn about the Lord if you have children. If you've got like 4 kids, say you've got 4 kids and you got 2 of them kids that they just don't get along. Their parents right now listening to this nodding their heads going, yeah. You got 2 kids and they don't get along. They're fighting. Every time you turn around, they're fighting. They're fighting. They're bickering. They don't get along. And you are like, you too. Would you just stop? Doesn't matter if he's poking you. Shut up. But does the parent like hate one over the other? You know, one child is like, yeah, but it's their fault. No, it's their fault. You know, the parent is like, just quit it and get along. Your siblings, stop. The parent loves both of the children, but the children just don't get along. But they're still both children. If you could have, you were attending a, you know, real Christian church, you know, and people earnestly seek, you know, the Lord, and you go and, you know, interact with them on a regular basis, multiple times a week, whatever the case. Look, anytime you've got a group of people, there's going to be somebody that just because of your personalities, y'all just don't get along. Y'all just clash. You don't like them. And you know what? That's fine. You know, look, I beat it to death here. I don't believe biblical love has to anything to do with an emotion you feel. I think that's a misconception. There's going to be people that you don't like, but that doesn't mean God doesn't like them. Like I say, think of the comparison to bickering siblings. Does the parent hate one of the kids? Well, I hope not. But it doesn't change the fact that those two kids don't get along. They ain't never gonna get along. They might get along someday. They might not. They might always just never get along because it's just their personalities. As no, it doesn't mean one kid is better than the other kid. They just have such clashing personalities, they can't get along. Now, hopefully, you know, as they grow up, they mature to the point where they can at least be civil so that everybody can get together and, you know, enjoy time together without everything turning into some sort of drama. But the point is, the parent doesn't love one child over the other. So this tells us that we shouldn't have the incorrect view that just because we don't like somebody, I consider them an enemy, doesn't mean that God views them the same way. Because again, when people talk about this, you know, love your enemies, Christianity, they love your enemies, that what they really mean is people they personally don't like. And Christian believers, I said that about non-believers, but Christian believers fall into that same trap too. Like you got somebody and you don't like them and you just automatically, you know, they're a child of the devil. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. You know, I mean, what if they too are a Christian believer? Y'all just don't get along because of personality reasons. Again, just because you don't like somebody and again, as everybody more or less winds up being most people's personal definition of they're an enemy. I don't like them. You shouldn't jump to the conclusion. That means God doesn't like them either. God isn't bound by what you feel. You just don't like them. Well, that doesn't mean that God doesn't like them either. So in other words, what? Love your enemies. I have a problem with that. But that's just God saying, would you two kids just get along? Just stop. Bickering. Quit poking her. And you quit mouthing off and trying to punch his button. Stop it, you two. You siblings, things aren't that hard. But we're given these things in this life to understand God. These are all ways in which we're supposed to understand things, like I say, just a little bit. From his perspective. And the great thing is, the more, and we need to wrap up, but the more you do understand things, and like I say, as much as you can, I'm not saying you can like raise to the level of seeing things from God's point of view, but as much as you can accomplish of that, the more you're going to grow and the more things around you in this world will make sense. And that's going to make this life easier for you, by the way. Because if you can make sense of these things, then it's easier to deal with them. You know, one of the hardest things to deal with is when stuff, you know, is going on in your life. You have no idea, no understanding. You can't wrap your head around it. But if you can understand these things, you know, as much as you can from God's point of view, then they do start to make more sense. The meaning of these things makes more sense, and you can put things in a much better perspective. Which all in all is going to make your life better, whether here in this world or in the eternal world to come. Well, anyway, like I say, hopefully you got something out of it. I realized it was just kind of a random discussion this week. It's how it is. Sometimes you get random. But hopefully it's something that as Christian believers, you know, you can kind of sit around, think about a little bit, and maybe, you know, give you that perspective in this life, hopefully. Hopefully, anyway, we need to wrap on up. Don't forget, be sure and check us out on Fridays, Daily Nationalist. Me and Sven sit down and have a, it's always a fun show. Hopefully, you check that out as well. I enjoy it. So, and of course, you know, we'll be back next Tuesday here for the Parish of the Patriots, and I hope to see you then. Until then, you know, keep your sanity, keep your faith. The clown ride goes on. There's no way off the clown car, it seems. We'll be back. No doubt we'll have all sorts of things to discuss next week. So we'll see you then.